with the, I know that there's technically nothing that's coming up Shabbos, and I know this really has to do with next Shabbos, and what this means is the following, that we are probably still going to have shir. We won't be able to have shir next Thursday, obviously, because it's whatever. We might be able to have shir over Chol HaMoed to get Bereishis down, because I don't know when else we're going to do Bereishis. Bereishis is going to be a little bit off. We got the Dos HaBracha. We skipped out on Hazinu. I gave it at Skokie last week on Rosh Hashanah. But the Dos HaBracha is the following. Levi has a very strange bracha. It says, Levi Amar, anybody who is a Levi who got called up for the second Aliyah this week, Levi Amar, Tumecha v'urecha liish chasidecha. The Urim v'tumen go to the man of chesed, Asher nisiso b'masa, he was tested in masa, to revei o mei meriva, he was also tested, he had a fight in mei meriva, and what they were going to do. So here's the idea. Levi's bracha has Tumecha v'urecha. So what's Tumecha v'urecha? It should be Urim v'tumen. I mean, that's the way it should be, right? It shouldn't be Tumach of Urech. It's the only place in Tanakh where the word Tumim precedes the word Urim. So the question is why? Why would it be that way? Why would it be that way? So the real question is basically within...
What do you mean the word?
Tumach of... I don't know how you can translate it. Tumim is the completion. Urim is the lit up. And we have to understand what the Urim and the Tumim was. But let's try to explain everything. You know, let's start from the beginning. Here we go. If you wanted to have a direct question-answer session with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you wanted to ask him something, you wanted to get an answer back, so there was a kli that they were able to use that with. There was something they could use. On the choshen, which was the breastplate, that was hanging by little chains coming from the ephod, the backwards apron that the Kohen Gadol used to wear, only the Kohen Gadol, that choshen had a little fold in it. On the choshen were the stones with all the letters on them. Behind that fold was something. Big question, Rashi says it's little pieces, cloth, pieces of paper that had names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on them. Those names with the little clothin in that fold was called the Urim Bitumen. Those were the Urim Bitumen. The Urim was the ability to say, to light up the letters, and the Tumim was the ability to put the letters together to say which order it was supposed to be. Now, Rashi on this pasuk of Tumach of Urecha for sure caught on to this issue of why does it say Tumim before Urim. He says the following. He says, Klape Shechina hu medaber. We're talking about the Shechina. The Shechina, it's Tumim v'Urim. And then you have to ask, okay, so what does that mean exactly? Why by the Shechina would it be the opposite of the way that we look at it? So here we go. The two different shemos, although we don't know exactly what they are. So here's what it was. The Kohen Gadol, when he was given a question by a petitioner or somebody that needed something, he would stand facing the Arun Kodesh. The Arun Kodesh would be right there. He'd face the Arun Kodesh directly with the Choshen Mishpat on his chest, and he'd pick it up just a little bit to be able to see the letters. The questioner would stand behind him on either the right or the left side. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. And as he was asking the question, the Kohen Gadol would hear the question, think about the question, and then think of the name of God that was on the page of the Urim, that was on that little piece of the Urim, think about that name as hard as he could, have as much kavanah as he possibly could, and the letters would start to light up. The problem was, is that you might need the same letter twice. Or it could be that they're out of order. Or it could be, you don't know what it's going to be. You don't know what a Kaddish Baruch Hu is trying to say. It's not like a regular Ouija board where you're going one after the other after the other. It just lit up. So what he did then, after he saw that the letters were lit up, is he thought about the name that was on the Tumen. He thought about that name of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and the letters would be put together, not on the breastplate, but rather in his mind. All the letters would form out, and they would form in his mind, and he'd see a picture in his head of what the letters should be. And he'd be able to see from there what exactly it is. Part of the reason why Eli was in trouble with Chana, when he saw Chana davening and he asked Urim v'Tumim, what is this woman doing? How is she davening without saying it out loud? Part of the problem was the fact that he didn't use the Tumim correctly. And that's part of what Chana caught him on. He used the Urim, so he got the letters Shin, Chaf, Resh, and He, which he thought meant Shikora, she's a drunkard, when really it was supposed to be, if you used the Tumim, it would have turned itself around and formed into Chaf Shin Reish Hey, which was Kishera. That was something that Eli had not done, and therefore because of that, he, you know what, it messed up, but he didn't understand exactly what it was that he was being asked. Okay, so that's the Urim, that it lights up, and the Tumim is completing the entire idea. Both of them happened through Ruach HaKodesh. Both of them happened through this special Ruach HaKodesh that the Kohen Gadol had that was able to do it. So says the Maral Diskin. Maral Diskin, the famous Rav of Yerushalayim around the turn of the century, the old Brisker Rav before the Griz came in. When it comes to the Kohen trying to answer the question, the first thing you have to do is get the letters down, and then be able to know where to put the letters. You have to have the Urim, And then you have the Tumim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu already knew what the answer was, and then in order to tell the Kohen Gadol what he wanted, what did he have to do? He had to write up the letters. So by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Tumim, and then comes Urim. So by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the exact opposite order. He knows what's going on, that's the Tumim, he completed it, and then he just has to light it up for us. So therefore, says Rashi, Klapi Shechina Umedaver, that even though it seems to be the opposite order, it should be Urim Metumim, here it's Tumim Beurim, it's done that way because for Hashem, it's done in the opposite way, it's the exact opposite of what you'd think. But that doesn't really answer much, because, okay, that's really nice, that's a great answer as to what Rashi's talking about. But why would God hint that to us in Levi's Bracha at the end of the Torah? What in the world is going on that you're all of a sudden you're saying here, by the way, I know everything and I'll light it up to you next. I figured as much. I didn't need the pasuk to tell me such a thing. So what's the remez that you want? So the Chafetz Chaim says the following. The way a Navi understood the Urim Bitumen was like a mushel. Like a mushel, like a parable, like a story. It's unclear what it meant exactly. The Tumim is the Nimshal. What was meant by the mushel? So he explained it basically like the Maral Diskin, but not exactly that way. When you try to teach someone a complicated matter, when you try to say to somebody, here's something that's unbelievably complex. I'm going to try to explain it to you. I'm going to try to say it from A to Z. Right? And I'm trying to explain exactly what I'm trying to say here. And especially if it's by little kids or people that are of I guess you could say, of a lower intelligence, you always use a parable. You always use a story to be able to get your point across. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that way everyone understands what's going on, and maybe they don't get the nimshal so much, they don't always get what you're trying to get at, but at least they get the story and they're like, oh, I see a little bit, and maybe eventually they'll be able to get themselves to that nimshal. And that's our problem. Our problem is we're very visual learners. Very visual learners. We need pictures. We need a story. We need like hand motions to like go out there, and that's why you always have the thumb going all around. You need something to be able to feel like you're there. And then slowly but surely the nimshal is understood by the other party, but the whole purpose was really for the nimshal was nothing to do with the mushel. The mushel was, the details are not important. Here's the problem. People usually get so caught up in the mushel, they start arguing with the mushel. They start saying, that's ridiculous. I don't understand it because that, you know, why would anybody do such a thing? Why would anybody say such a thing? Why would anybody act that way? That's not the important part. The important part is not the mushel. The important part is the lesson being imparted by the mushel. The nimshal that's coming out from that mushel, that's the most important part here. Okay. It's only true by us because we have physical bodies and we're messed up. We need signs to understand everything, and we don't deal well with abstract corporal ideas. Corporal is in the C-O-R-P-O-R-E-A-L type of ideas. It just doesn't work that way. Kadosh Baruch Hu obviously needs none of that, because he's all up there in Shemayim. He gets everything like that, and everything's right there, and absolute MS, and the reason for everything is up there. So he doesn't really need a mushel whatsoever. It's just for us to really understand it. Here's the idea. You may have noticed that Shimon and Levi and Parshas Vayechi never got a bracha from Yaakov Avinu. They never received a bracha. In fact, they were cursed. Arur Apam. Cursed is their anger because it's so great. That's what Yaakov Avinu said to them. They never got a bracha. Ruvei never got a bracha. Shimon and Levi never got a bracha. Yehuda, ata yoducha achicha, said Yaakov Avinu. That started the brachos. Yehuda got one, then Yisachar and Zvulun got one, then Don Naphtali got Asher, Yosef obviously, Ephraim and Manasseh got their own bracha. Everybody got a bracha after that, but Shimon and Levi, along with Ruvein, didn't get a bracha. Over here, Ruvein is a little bit different. Ruvein was a strange type of a bracha. Levi got his bracha. Shimon, who was his partner in crime, he was the one who fought against Shechem, which Yaakovina was upset at, and that's why they didn't get a bracha. Levi did pretty well for himself. He became the spiritual leader of Klal Yisrael. He became the source of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Kohanim and the Kohanim Gedolim. I mean, it's pretty good. For a person who wasn't even blessed by Yaakovina to become the spiritual leader of everyone in Klal Yisrael, that's pretty darn good. What about Shimon? Shimon didn't do so well. They lost 37,000 people in the Midbar. They had the Znos of Maisa Shittim, what happened with Shlumi of Ansuri Shaddai, their Nasi, that went down. Things weren't looking so good for Shimon. And in fact, the stone that's used for Shimon on the Choshen is a green stone called Pitida. And the reason why, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, is because it's all about Znos. Shimon has a hot head, and he's all into Arias and Znos. And they needed to calm him down a little bit. So how did Levi get off so lucky? He's all good. Well, Shimon
is...
Why does green calm them down?
The green stone has a skula to cool a person down when there's a riot and when there's hot-headedness. Whatever that, they say, whether it's an emerald or something like that, there's something that, a quality of that stone that's able to calm you down a little bit. I don't know what else it is, but the Rabbeinu Bechaya in Parshas Tetzaveh goes through the entire thing and he says exactly what it is. To that, we say, we look at Levi and we say, he carries the Urim V'Tumim. The Kohen Gadol who's from Sheva Levi is the one carrying the Urim V'Tumim. Here, it's a reference, it's referring back to the Shekhinah. All answers reside with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So let's try to understand this. Although we don't always understand where these things, why these things happen, why Levi got so lucky and Shimon got so unlucky, and we look at it and we say to ourselves, well, that guy just had great mazel. That guy was born under the right star. And the other guy, he is so messed up. You can't believe how badly he did. But might as well, when it boils down to it, the nimshal, the real reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has. That's the tumecha. The urecha, the reasons that we can understand, will only be given to us at the end of time. So here, when you look at Levi, and you say, how in the world did Levi get so lucky? How did he do this? What ended up happening by him? Here, the Torah tells us, Tumim, and then the Urim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the reason for everything. We're not always going to be Zocha to get that answer. But he has all the answers we may never truly know. But the Nimshal is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All we get is a Mashal. We get a little bit of a story. We get a little bit of the ideas and the happenings and this and that and the other, but we're never going to fully understand it. And that's what we're trying to teach you with this, as opposed to calling the Urim V'Tumim like we do everywhere else, to tell you how much greater and how much more das HaKadosh Baruch Hu has than what we'll ever have.
Well, why are you saying that it's luck, though? It's, I mean, saying that Levi got off so, like, he got so good, and Shimon, I mean, like, you can really trace that kind of stuff back to, like, their
decision making.
New lesson learned.
Decision making. I agree with you. People will complain if you're not in the, if you didn't make that decision correctly. And they'll say to you, well, I wasn't in the position to make that decision correctly. That guy had that situation and I was put in a different situation. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put Levi in the situation that he did so that he would be able to become the person that he was, while Shimon was put in the situation that he was put in and he ended up becoming the person that he was?
Versus
I understood. Meaning, Shimon's Nasi versus Levi's Nasi went up against one another, Pinchas versus Zimri, and Pinchas made the right decision, Shimon made the wrong decision, Shlomo ben Sershadai made the wrong decision. How is he so lucky to be put in a position where he could make the right decision while Shimon's Nasi was not as lucky? He wasn't put in that position. Now, granted, it has to do with decision making as well, but a person can tie in the decision making was made. People are put in certain positions by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Some are going to make better decisions than others. So why didn't Shimon get that chance to be like Levi? That would be the tiny behind it. I will tell you, though, that it's going to lead on even further, because we're going to have to understand this concept of Nevuah to really get this. And unfortunately, we have to go through a bit of Derech Hashem. If you've never learned Derech Hashem before by the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, I highly suggest it. Highly suggested. You may never have as great of a Rebbe as I had learning Derech Hashem with. Rabbi Nelson Weiss and Beis Yisrael was one of the greatest Rebbe. I mamish, like a Baal Machshava. If you have any kashas, you could just ask Yis. I mean, he is a Baal Machshava par excellence when it comes to this. No. You're in the same chair. Same chair. So, but Rabbi Rabbi Weiss was, he explained this. I have notebooks full of my stuff on Derech Hashem. Derech Hashem is one of the most unbelievable sounds. So let's start like this. Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Zayin. The Pasuk says, Moshe ben Me'avas from Shana b'Moso. Moshe was 120 years old when he died. V'chasa eino v'lo naslecho. His eyes never dimmed, and it literally means his spittle never stopped. He was always able to keep speaking. He never slowed down, basically. There is an unreal Rashi here. Rashi says, lo chasa eino, his eyes did not dim, af mishames, even when he died. Now, the Maskil David says on that means even right before he died, he was still able to see perfectly. He wasn't like normal old men that as they get older, their eyesight starts dimming and dimming until it's almost all gone. He wasn't like that. He had his full eyesight until he died. That's how the Maskil David understands this puzzle. But the Mizrahi, the Gorarie, and the Sifri says not like that. It's that even after Moshe Rabbeinu died, his eyes never closed. An unbelievable line. Even after he died, his eyes were never closed. So we have to understand that Sifri is a brisa from the Tanoim and Amoraim that are telling us that even after he died, he still had bodily fluids, he was still able to speak and everything out there. And in fact, they do have this line, David Melech Yisrael Chai B'Kayim. David Melech and Yisrael are alive and well. From David Melech himself, that David Melech never really died, he's Chai V'Kayim. Melech refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a line in Bava Basra, Moshe Omeru Mishamish B'morom, that even now Moshe is standing and serving in the Beis HaMikdash Lamala, whatever that means. And Yaakov Avinu, that's the famous Gemara in Tainus Daf Ham and Beis. Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov Avinu never died. So those three people are Chai V'Kayim. They've been out there the whole time. But what does that mean? What does it mean that they never died? So Sfas HaMesh says an unbelievable thing over here. He says, normally, after a person dies, you close their eyes. It's one of the first things you do after a person dies. Not only by us, it's true by every nation. Every nation in the world does this. When a person dies, the eyes are closed. Because I guess it's a little freaky to think that the mace is still staring, still looking at you, when really it's just glassy eyes. There's nothing there. So everybody closes the eyes. It says in Sfas HaMesh, the reason why we do it is different from all the other nations in the world. The reason why we do it, he says, is because right before you die, you see the Pnei HaShechina. You die from seeing the Shekhinah itself. You see Kaviyachol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the eyes that saw the Shekhinah should see nothing else in Olam Hazeh. Should see no other physical object. So we close the eyes and we say that should be the last thing that his eyes ever see. And we close the eyes and we say that's it. But Moshe Rabbeinu, even when he was in this world, was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu face to face. He was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as whatever, to whatever level he was able to see it as, he was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Aspaklaria HaMe'ira, it's called. Through like a clear window that he was able to look through. He spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Peh El Peh. He didn't need different eyes. The same eyes he used in Olam Hazeh, he can use right now in Olam Haba. That's low cost, don't you know. His eyes were never closed. They never shut his eyes, says the Sfas HaMesh, that he sat there even after dead. His eyes are still wide open, able to see just the spirituality that he saw. And that's how great Moshe Rabbeinu was. That his eyes were so ruchni that he saw nothing but Kedusha and Hashem's role in this world. Kedusha's Moshe Rabbeinu. The closest you can get to anything like this is a story that Rabbi Cohn loves saying from Rav Elie Lopian. Rav Elie Lopian is the king of Mashkichim. The king of the Mashkiach of all Mashkichim. A famous Talmud of the Talmidim of Ruchem Lubavitch. Of the famous... he's the Baal Musar. But the Rav Elie Lopian was the Mashkiach. He's officially known as like the Mashkiach of everyone. The Mashkiach of Rav Matzio Solomon. Rav Elie Lopian, he apparently had eyes, this is what they said, where he was able to see without seeing you. He saw what he needed to see, but people, he never saw faces. He was able to look at a woman and yet not see the woman. He had the ability to be able to see something without seeing the physical aspects to it, which is unbelievable. He knew there was a form there, but he wouldn't see details, and thus there were no taivas. There was absolutely no taivas there. Rav Elie was famous for this. So a Talmud came up to him once. I mean, there's so many stories. I mean, like all the stories that they say about Rav Elie, about what he was able to do, and all the crazy things, crazy, by looking at people. Rav Elie had a Talmud who came up to him and said, Rebbe, please, I beg of you, let me learn how to do this. I want to be able to see the same way. I want to be able to look in the street without seeing anything, without dealing with my tithes, without having to go into my tithes. Please, let me be able to do it. Rav Elie asked him how old he was. He said, 18 years old. Rav Elie said, it's way too late to work on it. You'll never get to this level. You won't be able to do it. It's too late. It's already there engraved on your eyes. And in fact, scientifically, it's 100% true. Everything you see is engraved on your eye and implanted into your brain. Somehow put inside your brain. In fact, this is a study that was done, but I don't remember the actual report, and it's brought down by the Taim Minhagim, a different type of a line, but in the Likutim, page Tav Kuf Yud Gimel, that they looked, what they used to do sometimes in order to find a murderer, is they looked into the person who was murdered, they take his eye and they put it under a microscope, and they would look for a picture, because the eye stood, it was solid, with the last thing that he saw. So the last thing that he saw would have been the murderer. And he used to look into the eye to be able to find it. I don't know if it ever worked, but that's what they say that they were able to do. And I saw a study made on this once, nothing to do with this time in Minhagim, of what the last thing a person sees. In fact, if anybody knows Rav Chaim Chorsky from Skokie Yeshiva, I meant to ask him this today, and I never really fully asked him this. He's well known for being able to, he used to, he doesn't do this necessarily anymore, but when I remember when I was in high school, he would... You'd have to pick something in the room. Maybe there are people here that have that. You put something on the table. Somebody had to pick it. He would walk out of the room, and he would say, he would come back into the room, and you would think about what that object was, and he would look at your eyes, and then he would say exactly what that object was. And it never failed. Never failed. And I don't know how it worked exactly. I don't know if he was mamish looking at the eye and finding it, or if he was doing it by, I doubt, I don't know if he can read minds. I have absolutely no idea. Yeah, well, he was concentrating, of course. There's something. But he always looked at somebody first. He always looked at somebody first. He always saw something, and that's when he concentrated. I mean, listen, I don't know if that's what it is, and I meant to ask for Rav Chaim Twersky also, because he also, I don't know if anybody's, if anybody speaks with Rav Chaim Twersky. It's a psychological trick. So that's unbelievable. But how does it work exactly?
So that's true.
So no, but that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm not saying this is supernatural. It's in the eye. Meaning it's there somehow. You're able to do it somehow and be able to figure it out. It's just some way. There's some way and some issue of being able to do it. Great Mikubon, we're supposed to be able to see the people's sins by looking into their eyes. Listen, I get scared looking into certain Gedolim's eyes because I think that they're reading into my soul. That becomes a very, very scary thing. If anybody's seen these Mikubon, be able to speak to them or talk to them and they're staring at you in the eye, it's a scary thing to be able to deal with. It's a scary thing to be able to have. Not everybody's able to do it, but that's there. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes. Obviously, the king of all Nevi'im is going to get up there. But to understand that fully, you have to understand that level of Moshe Rabbeinu called Aspaklaria Meira. I'm going to give you a bit of an introduction in Nevuah. This is literally the Rashi Prakim. Derech Hashem in Chelet Gimel, Perek Gimel, Dalet, and Hay. Really goes through the entire thing. And again, I highly suggest, if you don't have the Sefer, find the Sefer. They have it in English. Rav Aryeh Kaplan translates it. Look it through. It is an unreal Sefer. Forget about the Shara Nevuah, just everything else. He says, a person has a drive to always know what's going on behind the scenes. They see a person, and they're always thinking, what's that guy thinking? What does that guy want? You don't just look at the guy and say, like, what's that guy doing? You say, what is that guy thinking about? Is he thinking about me? Is he thinking about this? Is he thinking about that? You have an automatic drive. You're never satisfied with just what you see. Why? Because you know innately that everybody has an neshama, that there's a spiritual world out there that we're not seeing, and there's something that you're missing. There's a physical world that you're seeing, but there's a spiritual world that you have no, but you're not privy to. And sometimes, says the Derech Hashem, you'll be given special shefa, a special bracha from Hashem, to know something that you shouldn't ordinarily know. And you are absolutely positive about it. You make no mistake. You are positive. You know everything about this issue, and you know this is true. That's called Ruach HaKodesh. Some things are natural. Meaning, you could have figured them out on your own if you would have kept working at the guy, and you would have realized, oh, that guy is a very hard worker. Or that guy is, that guy does this, or that guy does that. You could have thought a lot of things just by staring at somebody, and you'll be able to figure it out naturally. But some of these things are simply impossible to know. Sometimes you'll look at a person, and you'll have just a feeling. And that feeling is not just a doubt, maybe, maybe not. It's an absolute feeling of, I know that this person is going to say this. Call it almost like deja vu, but it's a little bit more than deja vu. It's a feeling of absolute certainty. Certainty, what that person is about to do, about something that he did in the past, something in the future, but it's just a thought that falls into your head. It's all in your head. You're just very sure that this is what's going to happen or this is what happened. Nevuah is a higher level than that Ruach HaKodesh. You feel a devekus to a Kodesh Baruch Hu during Nevuah. It's not just a thought that pops into your head. You feel like you're connected with someone. Like there's some type of a, like you're holding on to something and someone's holding on to you. That's what you feel like, some type of a devekus to the point where that connection is there and it's you are beyond positive, absolutely positive that whatever you saw or heard, which you saw or heard physically, is exactly what was there as if you saw it with your own eyes. It did not happen while you were awake. It happened while either you were asleep or in some type of catatonic state. Either dreamlike, a daydream, or an epileptic seizure. Something which you have no control over your physical body at that time. But you wake up, and it's not just a dream where you wake up and you just sort of like goes out of your head and dissipates like a little cloud. Not that's a dream. That's a 60th of Nevuah. Real Nevuah is where you are so positive it happened, so positive, you physically remember you being there and seeing it, but you know it never happened in this world. That's what Nevuah is like. Absolute positive. Now that understanding comes to you through Emtsayim, middle connections, not directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not like you see Hashem. You see His Meshursim, those who serve Him, like an angel, or a star, or an animal, other people, or other things like that. And there are many, many levels of it, many, many madrigos. It's like using a microscope with many facets. Sometimes it'll be 10 times, sometimes it'll be 50 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, and 1,000,000 times. All nevuah can be different depending on what kind of a level, what type of a level you are on in the first place. In the end, at best, it's a very, very, very real dimyon, imagination thing that goes inside your head. But you have absolutely no spekos. You know you saw it. But it takes a lot of work. You can't just automatically get into nevuah. Ruach HaKodesh can just come to you. That can happen once in a while. But nevuah takes a lot of work to build up your system and get used to it. You start off very low, like Shmuel Anavi when he was called by God from the Beis HaMikdash. The name was called out Shmuel, Shmuel. And he thought it was Eli. He thought it was a physical person calling him. Because he didn't realize that it was a level of Nevuah. And he went to Eli and he asked Eli, and he said, it wasn't me. And finally Eli told him, I think it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu calling you. Answer it and say, who, you know, that you are Shmuel, Hineni, here I am, what do you want to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And Shmuel did that. Shmuel, at the time, we don't know. He was young. He was definitely young. Well, a kid, maybe in his 20s, maybe lower than that. We don't know. We don't know exactly when it was. But that's exactly that. And so too with Moshe Rabbeinu with the burning bush. The very first nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu saw was a burning bush that was right there. He saw it physically. And only afterward he heard a voice that seemed to be Moshe Rabbeinu's voice, that seemed to be Amram, his father's voice. And he thought it was Amram calling to him out of a burning bush, but then he realized that it gets higher and higher and higher. And he realized he's missing more and more and more, and the nevuah became greater and greater until at the end of his life, he knew exactly what it was. But it started off very, very low, and you have to build yourself up more and more and more. It was taught. Nevuah was taught with a Rebbe. People had Rebbeim for Nevuah. How to keep the Dveikus going. How to use Shemos to bring about a certain type of Ruach HaKodesh to eventually lead you to Nevuah. And how not to use the Shemos HaKodesh. And how to make the vision clearer and clearer and clearer. When the teaching is forgotten, either b'shogig or b'mezid, whether you forget it b'shogig accidentally or on purpose, it could lead to disastrous results. If the Navi messes up, then the Tzad Atuma, the Shadim out there and the Satan try to get in, they try to fool the Navi into thinking that what he's seeing is a real thing, when in reality, it's just a fake. And the only way to tell the difference is that the Nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolutely positive. You have no doubts about it. But the Nevuah given by Nevuah, the vision given by the Satan, or from the sides of Tuma, that is you're not positive. It's a suffix. You don't know for sure whether it's going to happen or it did happen or whatever. You're just sitting there doubtfully. But if you don't have a proper Rebbe and you don't have proper teaching leading yourself up to it, you won't really know the difference. You'll think, you'll convince yourself that the suffix that you saw is a vadai. You'll think that there's something really there. And you'll start mistranslating the Nevuah. You'll start mistranslating the wrong way. That's what happened to Tzidkiyahu ben Kenana by Ahav. Ahav had a Navi, Tzidkiyahu ben Kenana, who said, go out to war, fight and you'll win. And another Navi came by, a real Navi came by, and said, you will not win, you're going to be killed, don't go out to war. And Ahav listened to Tzidkiyahu ben Kenana. Tzidkiyahu ben Kenana had a false prophecy of Navos, the Ruach of Navos, the spirit of Navos that came to him, that told him something that was a lie. And he couldn't tell that it wasn't real Nevuah. If he really looked into it, he would have realized, I have doubts about this Nevuah. But he didn't do that, and he mistranslated it. Another way of looking at it is like Yonah. Yonah saw that Nineveh was going to be, and here's the word, I don't know if it was a vision of Nineveh overturning, the city of Nineveh overturning, or if this is for Master Yonah for Yom Kippur, or if Yonah saw just the word Nineveh Mishapech. I don't know which one it was. It was one of the two. It was either a vision or the words Nineveh Mishapech. The problem is that Mishapech can be translated in two different ways. Either Mishapech could mean it will be destroyed, or it could be that Mishapech could mean they'll turn themselves around and do tshuva. It could be one of the two. Yonah translated as they'll be destroyed, but in reality it meant they're going to do tshuva. That was the nevuah that he saw, but because he didn't have all the proper training, Yonah, he didn't see it fully correctly, or he didn't translate it fully correctly as he should have, and therefore, he didn't know exactly what to do, and that's part of the reason why he ran away. That's part of what Darach Hashem is saying. In the end, it still happened, yes, but it didn't get mishapech what Yonah thought, that it would be destroyed. But this nevuah was still not like Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah. Their nibble was through a vision, using physical objects that they're used to and that they can understand as levels to be able to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants in the first place. Similar to the Urim Bitumim, shining up letters and then putting them together to get to the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to tell you. It's a vision. It's done either while you're sleeping or while your body is in a deep sleep, while you're in something, in an induced catatonic state, as we said before, and only when you're not under your own physical power. And not only that, it seems distant. Aspaklaria she'ena me'ira means it's like windows beyond windows beyond windows beyond windows. You feel like it's all the way out there, and there's windows, opaque windows in front of you, in which you can't really see that far into it. You can't really see what's all the way over there in the end. It's veiled glasses. That's what it really is. Veiled glasses after veiled glasses after veiled glasses. But Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, Nevuah's Moshe Rabbeinu, which we say, lo kam Navi od b'Yisrael, like Moshe Rabbeinu, that there was nobody else like Moshe Rabbeinu, was even when he was fully awake and fully aware. He could be speaking to other people. And in the middle, he would say, give me a second. And he'd stare off, and he would have a pure vision in his head as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was standing opposite him, like where John is right now. And it'd be as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was standing right there telling him something while everything else, everybody else is right there. No catatonic state, no sleep. Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to have Nebuah in his sleep. He didn't even have it at night. The only Nebuah that he had at night was in the palace of Paro when he was told about Kechatzos Laila, that the next night there was going to be the Makis Bechoros. It's the only time he had it at night, but at that, other than that, there was not one Nebuah that happened at night that it would be clear as day. And it was only as if there was a piece of glass in between them. Like a person, I don't mean to give this type of a mashal, but meaning a person speaking to another person in jail. Well, you pick up the phone, and you're hearing the other person on the other side, and you're seeing the other person, but you can't really hear. There's a glass in between you, and you can't really hear it. It's just coming to you through a speaker. Through another speaker. That was Nevuah's Moshe Rabbeinu. It was clear. No riddles. There were no pictures. Nothing like that. He understood HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ideas and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to see as clear as anyone could ask. And that's why we have no doubts. No doubts at all about anything that the Torah says. Every word and letter was given to Moshe Rabbeinu by HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. There was no, here's a picture of what happened. Now you write down, Moshe Rabbeinu, what you want to write down. No. Every letter and every word was given directly. And Moshe Rabbeinu, it's as if you're directing me to say what I need to write down. That's what it was like. That makes it so different, and that's called Aspaklaria Hamiira, and that's what it means by the Lokam Navi Od B'Yisrael Kamosha Asher Yedo'o Hashem Panim Al Panim. He knew God face to face as if he was standing right there. Says the Maral Diskin, there's one other difference that he has to add on to that Derech Hashem. One other difference that the Ramchal doesn't mention. The difference is that other Nevi'im were given a Nevuah for specific instances. Their Nevuah was not for all time and all situations and everything like that. Their Nevuah was for specific instances. Here's a Nevuah when Chizkiyahu defeats Sennacherib. Here's a Nevuah for when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. Here's a Nevuah for when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. This is the idea of what they're given, those specific instances, while Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah lasts for all time and applies in all generations for every person. There is something that affects every person at every time in any place. It does not make a difference where. That's what Shiras HaAzinu is all about. Only Moshe Rabbeinu can write a 620 letter song that has every single bit of the world, past, present, and future in it, with everything you need to know, all hidden within the Pesukim. In 620 letters. That's all it is. Only Moshe Rabbeinu has the ability to be able to do such a thing. Except for one other person. Says the Sifra, Lo kam Navi od b'Yisrael kim Moshe. There will never be another Navi in Yisrael like Moshe. B'Yisrael lo kam. Aval b'umo se'olam kam. There will be somebody in the other nations of the world who will be as great as Moshe. And who is that? Bilam. How do we understand that? That's true. That's why it says below Yakum. It doesn't say below Yakum Navi Od. It says below Kum. There has not been in the past, except there is Bilam in the past. Now listen. This is an unbelievable line, and if you misunderstand this, this can be Mamish Kfira. But this is what he says. Okay? The Maral Diskin says about Bilam. How do we understand that? Bilam at a Spaklaria Hamira? Bilam saw Kadosh Baruch Hu like Moshe Rabbeinu, like a glass in between them, and he spoke to God? How is that Shaykh? Bilam was a Rosh HaGomer. He slept with his donkey. He got to speak with God for doing that? He's a Rosh HaGomer. How in the world could that possibly be? Here's the Maral Diskin. There's only one other person that had a Nevuah during the day, like Moshe Rabbeinu, while he was awake, like Moshe Rabbeinu, and had a Nevuah that applies for all time. the brachos of Bilam apply to every person and every generation in the future until Mashiach comes. Ma tovu olecha Yaakov, mishkano secha Yisrael, apply for every person. We say it every morning. There is no one in the world who has ever or will ever say a nevuah like that except for Moshe Rabbeinu and Bilam. Now we have to understand why. Where did Bilam come from? I'll tell you another question. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra. Unbelievable Gemara. Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. It says, it goes through all the different Svarim, the 24 Svarim of Tanakh. You know, so it goes through Bereishis Shmos by Yikra by Mevor Devarim. Then it goes through Yoshua, right? Shoftim, Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel. It goes through everything. All the 24 Svarim, including the Trei Aser. It goes through everything. It says, who wrote what? Who wrote what Svarim? It goes to what Ezra wrote, and what Shmuel and Avi wrote, and what all was written, what everything was. And it says, what did Moshe Rabbeinu write? And it says, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, you ready? The Torah. Sefer Iyuv. According to that opinion, he was the one that wrote Iyuv. Okay? And the third one was Parshas Bilam. So everybody asks, Parshas Bilam, it's part of the Torah. Parshas Bilam is not separate from the Torah. If you wrote the Torah, then you include Parshas Bilam. Parshas Bilam is no different than that. What? I'm sorry? It makes no difference. Parshas Bilam is still part of the Torah. If you say, I wrote the Torah, are we trying to say that Parshas Bilam was added in at a later time? Chas v'shalom. No way. So what does it mean that Parshas Bilam, what does it mean that he wrote Parshas Bilam that is considered something separate? Here's the idea. Parshas Bilam is part of the Torah. But every other part of the Torah was told to Moshe Rabbeinu by a directive by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, here's what you write. Here's what you write. And he heard it directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he wrote it down from what he heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The only difference is Parshas Bilam. Parshas Bilam was written verbatim from the brachos that Bilam gave. It wasn't directly from Hashem. It was Hashem's words given to Bilam, that a Kaddish Baruch Hu said, copy down the words that were given to Bilam. That's the only difference between them. Every other part of the Torah was a direction from Hashem to write them down as our Torah. Parshas Bilam was simply copied word for word from what Bilam had said. It was a copy. It wasn't a directive through Nevuah from a Kaddish Baruch Hu like the rest of the Torah was. Rather, it was a copy given from Nevuah, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe. That's the only exception to this rule. And he's the only person that came anywhere close. Why was Bilam Zocha? You have to go back to the beginning. Bilam, we have no idea why he was Zocha. But he did have one thing that's strange. He had something called Shisum Ha'ayin. Isn't it unbelievable? Moshe Rabbeinu never shut his eyes, even when he died. Lo Chosa Eino. Because his eyes saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Bilam had something called Shisum Ha'ayin. Anybody want to know what that stands for? What does Shisum Ha'ayin mean?
Sealed eye.
Sealed eye. Bilam only had one eye that worked. A left eye. His right eye, says the Ben Yishai, it's a little sick, had no pupil. It was pure white. And it was impossible to see out of that eye. So that Bilam would not be metameyet. It was an unbelievable eye of Kedusha that Bilam had, that he never used, except for once, when he got the brachos directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not speak to Bilam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Bilam the ability to see out of his right eye, the only time he was able to see. And this is what Bilam saw. Ma tovu olecha Yaakov, mishkan osecha Yisrael. He had no choice but to praise Bnei Yisrael. I don't know if anybody else has been born that way, with a pure white eye that's glazed over without any pupil. Suffice it to say, even if there was, they may not be Zocha like Bilam was. It's this great gift to have a direct Nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu when it comes to Nevuah. I don't think there's anybody else like that. But he was. And he was given it. Why? Go back to the beginning of this year. Sometimes we don't know these things. Tumechavu recha lish chasidecha. So what's our summary? Tumim and then Urim. Hashem knows all. To him there's a plan. Not always is that revealed to us. Number two, Moshe's eyes can see Olam Hazeh even after death. And number three, Aspaklaria Mehira, the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, will never be equated by any other Navi of all time. The only person who came close was Bilam, and Bilam was not in the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was told. That's the idea behind it. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos, and... Gemara Chasima Tova to everybody.
The reason for Bilam is so that the guy